Voices.
Hi, I'm Calvin. Do you have an opinion but have difficulty expressing it in public? Are you afraid to express your views because you can't organize your thoughts or control nervousness? Would you like to inspire, inform, entertain, or motivate others more efficiently? Toastmasters International is a nonprofit educational organization devoted to helping you improve those communication skills. Together, we help you overcome your fear of speaking in public in a social, supportive atmosphere. We provide coaches and mentors to guide you in your path to improve public speaking. The club that I am a member of, Southwest Speakers, meets every Thursday at 7:15 p.m. at the Asian Chamber of Commerce, 7457 Harwin Drive. You can always find a club that fits your schedule. Please visit www.toastmasters.org for more information about a club near you or call 281-495-6946 and we'll be glad to help you speak your mind.
First you listen, then you fall in love. You have your favorite programs that you listen to each and every week. And finally, you do the right thing by calling in that pledge of support to KPFT. You feel great, but guess what? Your job, it's not done just yet. You still need to fulfill your promise to KPFT by sending that pledge payment today. And when you do, you take that often forgotten last step. Don't wait any longer. KPFT depends on you.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. We have a pretty packed show tonight. David Elliott will be joining us from Washington to inform us on national issues. Phil Walters will be coming from the Buyers Club to talk about what's going on with HIV, AIDS, and medicine and stuff like that. And we're going to be talking to an author later. But before we do that and also have news wrap and other things from this way out, we're going to go to London for the BBC News here on KPFT Houston.
News with Jerry Smith. A vote by bishops of the Episcopal Church in the United States on whether to confirm the election of the church's first openly homosexual bishop, Dean Robinson, has been delayed following last-minute accusations against him. The first involves an alleged connection with a gay and bisexual youth website, and the second is an accusation of inappropriate conduct. An investigation has been launched by the bishops. The Reverend Ed Bacon, a supporter of Mr. Robinson, said the allegations had not come as a surprise.
We really did expect something like this to take place, that there would be some kind of resistance expressed. So actually, I was not shocked at all. I think there's always resistance to the church moving forward. There's always resistance to newness being born in the church. I think there's always resistance. There has always been resistance whenever the church in America, the Episcopal Church, has brought an end to a season of bigotry.
Conservatives had warned that an endorsement of Mr. Robinson's election would cause a split within the church. There's been no comment from Mr. Robinson himself yet. The United Nations has begun consultations about a peacekeeping force for Liberia. UN troops are due to replace a mainly Nigerian contingent of peacekeepers by the 1st of October. The initiative comes as the first Nigerian troops flew into country on Monday amid widespread rejoicing by war-weary Liberians. Our UN correspondent, Greg Barrow, reports.
Discussions have started between the UN and a number of nations who might contribute troops to the Liberia peacekeeping operation. Diplomats say India, Pakistan, Bangladesh and South Africa, as well as a number of West African countries, have indicated a willingness to deploy troops to keep the peace once the multinational force has restored law and order in Liberia. Hedi Anabi, the Deputy Under-Secretary General for Peacekeeping, said the force would be similar in size to that which was deployed until recently in neighbouring Sierra Leone. That could mean up to 17,000 blue-helmeted troops. Diplomats say many of the nations thinking about supplying troops will be watching to see how the mainly Nigerian multinational force fares in Liberia before making any firm offers.
Palestinian leaders have denounced Israel's plan to release more than 300 Palestinian prisoners on Wednesday, saying it does not go far enough. The Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat described the move as a fraud, saying the Israelis would free some Palestinians, yet still arrest others. The Palestinians have said they want all 6,000 Palestinian prisoners held by Israel to be released. You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. The Muslim separatist group in the Philippines, the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, has announced the death of its leader, Salamat Hashim. The vice chairman of the group said Mr. Salamat had died of a heart attack more than 2 weeks ago. He said the news had been delayed while the group informed his relatives and chose a successor. He'd recently agreed to resume stalled peace talks with the Philippine government. Forest fires are continuing to burn across Portugal, despite the efforts of thousands of firefighters to contain the flames. 9 people have died so far in the fires. The Portuguese government has declared a national calamity, opening the way to those who've lost property to claim for compensation. Claire Marshall reports from Porto Alegre in Portugal.
A huge area of the parched Portuguese countryside has now been consumed by the flames. More than 53,000 hectares have been destroyed. 3,000 firefighters are continuing to do what they can to contain the blazes. They are exhausted. Some of these fires have been burning night and day for more than a week. One local villager involved in fighting the blazes told the BBC that no one had seen fires like this in living memory. Water-carrying planes sent by Italy, Morocco and Spain have dumped hundreds of tons of water onto the forests. It seems as if they are helping at least to contain the worst fires.
The latest monthly report by the body representing the world's airlines predicts that companies will return to profit next year after the steepest downturn in their history. The International Air Transport Association says airlines lost $4 billion worth of business due to the SARS epidemic earlier this year. Ocean carriers were worst affected because their region was the focus of the illness. Business organizations in North Korea have sent messages of condolence to the South Korean conglomerate Hyundai over the death of Chung Mong-hung, who'd been building economic links with Pyongyang. He was the chairman of Hyundai Asan, a company involved in joint economic ventures with North Korea. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And I'm Joan Devlin.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
We're all here this evening, and I'm really glad that Glenn's here, because last week I wasn't so good on the board.
Glenn has a tough job.
He does it so well.
Well, thank you.
This week, Joan has an author.
Yes, Roger N. Lancaster, who is the author of The Trouble with Nature, Sex and Science in Popular Culture. He breaks down basically the myth that being gay is not natural. And he talked a little bit about biology and science and how we're hardwired. And it's just going to be a very, very interesting interview.
And David Elliott will join us after the news. He'll be talking about local and national issues, probably mostly about the presidential race, which is starting actually to heat up. It sounds pretty interesting. And then Glenn will be interviewing Fred Walters and the Buyers Club. And they're going to talk about their nutritional and educational effort for affordable supplements for people with HIV/AIDS. So let's go to news app now and listen to the news.
I see you caught me off guard. There we go.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 2nd, 2003. Legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples came under fire this week from two of the world's greatest powers, the Vatican and U.S. President George Bush. The Vatican officially published in 7 languages a previously leaked 12-page document called Considerations Regarding Proposals to Give Legal Recognition to Unions Between Homosexual Persons. That's been called its strongest statement on any subject in decades. It particularly targets politicians of the Roman Catholic faith, saying they have a moral duty to oppose any legislation recognizing gay and lesbian partners. It declares marriage is holy while homosexual acts go against the natural moral law. There are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family. To vote in favor of a law so harmful to the common good is gravely immoral. Those who would move from tolerance to legitimization of specific rights for cohabiting homosexual persons need to be reminded that the approval or legalization of evil is something far different from the toleration of evil. It also says that allowing children to be adopted by gay and lesbian couples would actually mean doing violence to these children in the sense that their condition of dependency would be used to place them in an environment that is not conducive to their full human development. Indeed, the language of the document is so strong that the Irish Council for Civil Liberties warned that its distribution could lead to prosecution under Ireland's law against incitement to hatred, which provides for up to 6 months in jail.
But Catholic bishops in several countries, including Scotland, the Philippines, and the Pope's native Poland, were quick to join the campaign. Particularly vocal were some Canadian bishops, including Calgary's Fred Henry, who warned that Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, a Catholic, is jeopardizing his eternal salvation with his move to open the national definition of marriage to include gay and lesbian couples. Ottawa Archbishop Marcel Gervais has also both publicly and privately chastised Chrétien over the marriage bill, but Chrétien has previously emphasized that Canada has a division between church and state. The head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference in the province of Ontario, Bishop Jean-Louis Plouffe, took aim at Chrétien's likely successor, Paul Martin, who's well known as a devout Catholic, saying, "I would expect a Catholic politician would not push away his Catholic convictions because he's a politician," suggesting the alternative would be to be totally schizophrenic. Martin responded that as a lawmaker, he must take in a wider perspective in his own faith. Canada's National Conference of Catholic Bishops decided this week to seek to argue against the government's marriage bill before the Canadian Supreme Court, which is currently reviewing a draft at the government's request. A review of European press reactions by Germany's Deutsche Welle found editorial opinion and op-eds largely critical of the Vatican's stance.
Of course, gays and lesbians around the world howled in protest, including those who are Catholics and those who are elected officials. Openly gay Irish Senator David Norris expressed fear that what he called a hate-filled message would lead to discrimination and violence and said the Vatican should be ashamed. Openly gay Australian Senator Brian Gregg called the Vatican document an appalling interference by the Church into domestic politics and an abuse of power. However, Australia's Deputy Prime Minister, John Anderson, said the national government agrees with the Vatican's opposition to recognizing gay and lesbian couples. Openly gay German MP Volker Beck described the publication as a sad document of narrow-minded fanaticism. Chris Carter, a gay Catholic who was New Zealand's first openly gay MP, was incredulous that the church wasn't concentrating on more significant issues such as poverty, child abuse, and violence. Italy's openly gay MP and longtime activist Franco Grillini shrugged off the church document as just the latest move in their homophobic crusade. The head of the Czech Republic's activist group, Czech Gay Initiative, Jirka Hromada, was one of many who suggested the church's attack on gays might be a distraction from the Vatican's own scandals of priests abusing children. One Brazilian gay activist group, GGB, promised a campaign of protest letters against Catholic dioceses.
Separate from the Vatican attack, U.S. President George W. Bush this week chose to take a stand for legislation to specifically prevent legal same-gender marriages, something he'd indicated just a few weeks earlier was premature. At a press conference, he was asked, "Many of your supporters believe that homosexuality is immoral. They believe and culturally. As someone who's spoken out in strongly moral terms, what's your view on homosexuality?" The president responded,
I am mindful that we're all sinners. And I caution those who may try to take the speck out of their neighbor's eye when they got a log in their own. I think it's very important for our society to respect each individual, to welcome those with good hearts, to be a welcoming country. On the other hand, that does not mean that somebody like me needs to compromise on an issue such as marriage. And that's really where the issue is headed here in Washington, and that is the definition of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I believe a marriage is between a man and a woman, and I think we ought to modify that one way. We've got lawyers looking at the best way to do that.
There's little doubt that the president's statements represent an effort to appease religious conservatives in his Republican Party and to create a wedge issue for next year's elections.
The party's Senate Republican Policy Committee, a group that researches issues toward developing legislative strategies, this week issued a policy paper entitled "The Threat to Marriage from the Courts." That paper emphasizes an amendment to the U.S. Constitution as the only way to stop the courts from legalizing gay and lesbian marriages. Such an amendment has already been introduced in the Congress for the second time, and support for it is growing since the U.S. Supreme Court struck down state sodomy laws in June. At the end of June, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist spoke strongly in support of that amendment, but the president indicated that it was too soon and unnecessary.
Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle still believes that the Federal Defense of Marriage Act is adequate. That 1996 measure, signed into law in the dead of night by Democratic President Bill Clinton, both prohibits any federal recognition of gay and lesbian couples and allows the states to refuse to recognize any gay or lesbian marriage another state may someday perform.
But a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee will start next month reviewing the Defense of Marriage Act to take care to do whatever it takes to ensure that the principles defined there remain the law of the land, in the words of Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas.
Openly gay Democratic Congressmember Barney Frank denounced the president's statement as a political ploy. He said, "With President Bush's popularity dropping and the serious problems confronting America worsening, the administration seeks to divert attention by demagoguing on the issue of same-sex unions."
At least 15,000 people marched for Pride this week in London's 31st Pink Parade, and more than 60,000 attended the subsequent Party in the Park, despite rainy weather. Leading the procession were about 80 members of the Metropolitan Police Authority's Gay Police Association, half of them wearing full uniforms in this first year that that's been allowed. At least one officer on duty for the event threw them a salute from the sidelines.
In New York City, the Harvey Milk High School, a program for lesbian, gay, and trans youth to receive their education without fear of harassment and violence that was set up in 1984 by the Hedrick Martin Institute, will open this year for about 100 students as a freestanding school with city funding. The move has sparked a variety of criticism from religious conservatives who are planning a lawsuit, from the principals union demanding it should be open to all potentially victimized students, and from various individuals who don't believe that segregation is the answer to the problem of school harassment. But city officials, including the mayor and city council members, are proudly defending the school, whose upgrade was developed under New York's previous administration.
And finally, August 1st was a little-noticed landmark in European history. As Armenia's revised criminal code went into effect that day, the European political sphere was free of laws criminalizing private, non-commercial, homosexual acts between consenting adults for the first time in perhaps 1,500 years. The European section of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, which worked hard to reach this goal, dates the continent's sodomy laws back to the legal code established by the Byzantine Emperor Justinian in the 6th century. While repeal began 200 years ago with the Napoleonic Code, in 1950, two-thirds of today's 48 European countries still criminalized homosexual acts. ILGA Europe Executive Director Ailsa Spindler said, "This is an important milestone in the achievement of LGBT rights in Europe, but it is just the beginning." A number of countries, Albania, Bulgaria, Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Serbia, Montenegro, and the United Kingdom, still have discriminatory provisions in the criminal law. 33 European countries provide no legal recognition whatsoever for same-sex partners. And of course, legal equality is itself only one element in the fight against discrimination.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 2nd, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, as we all know, it's very hot here in Houston. It's a dog days of summer. And I imagine it's pretty hot up there in Washington. Is it, David?
Oh, it is not as hot up here as it is down there, Jack. In terms of the temperature, it's only in the 80s here. But politically speaking, you're right, it is very hot.
Well, everybody's on vacation, though.
But, you know, politics are upon us. You know, the Iowa caucus is only 5 months and 2 weeks away from now. And we've also had a lot of developments on the issue of same-sex marriage.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Jack, let me tell you about some news that just broke today, if I may.
Sure.
One group of voters in our lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community has spoken in terms of the presidential race. And I have to tell you that the doctor is in. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, full disclosure here, they're my former employer, conducted a poll of 1,471 people who attended Pride events in Los Angeles, New York City, and Washington, D.C. And they asked these folks who they planned to vote for president. Now,
hopefully they're planning to vote for somebody.
Well, yes, they definitely were. Now, before I tell you the results of this poll, you know, I have to point out that it is not scientific. The people who attend Pride events in these three cities, New York City, D.C., and L.A., are, on the one hand, not representative of LGBT people everywhere, but I suspect that they probably are somewhat representative of people who vote in Democratic primaries in general.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, 32% of these respondents said they want to vote for Howard Dean for president. The second place finisher was John Kerry, who had just 10% of those surveyed. 7% favored Joseph Lieberman, 6% favored Dick Gephardt, and 5% favored Carol Moseley Braun.
Wow.
Now, what does this result mean? It means two things. First, LGBT activists who attend Pride events tend to be a more sophisticated slice of the electorate than most Americans. These respondents know that Howard Dean, as the former governor of Vermont, signed the nation's first civil union law. Second, this result probably reflects the growing support of Democratic Party activists for Dean's insurgent campaign. Although most Americans still have never heard of Howard Dean, those who closely follow Democratic Party politics increasingly are climbing aboard the Dean bandwagon. So that's what that probably means.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I went to a grassroots organizing thing at the Harris County Democratic Party this past Saturday, and they were talking about his website and how sophisticated Dean's website was. And in fact, they were doing a challenge to one of Cheney's fundraisers, and this was an online challenge, and I understand that they did pretty well with it.
Oh, they did incredible. They out-fundraised Cheney. They brought in a $500,000 over a 7-day period. The website is www.deanforamerica.com. And I have to say to the listeners here that I am not endorsing Howard Dean, and in fact, this program does not endorse presidential candidates.
Or any candidates.
Right, ever. So, you know, I have to give that qualifier, but it's kind of exciting to see grassroots politics at work. Now, there's something else that I wanted to mention, Jack, that's been in the news a whole lot. You know, you've heard, your listeners have heard, that President Bush came out last week in favor of some type of ban on same-sex marriage.
Yes.
This is no surprise. I mean, after all, Bush himself is on record as favoring the exact type of anti-gay sodomy laws that have been now struck down as unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, I'd like to share with you real briefly, if I could, a couple of quotes. These are my favorite quotes of the week that came out in response to Bush's comments. And then I'm going to give you a brief prediction about what's going to happen. My very favorite quote comes from Evan Wolfson, who is the executive director of the group Freedom to Marry. And he said, quote, "The White House finally found a weapon of mass destruction. Lesbian and gay couples seeking to care for their kids and loved ones by getting married." And my second favorite quote comes from our friend, Congressman Bernie Frank, one of the very few openly gay men in Congress, a Democrat from Massachusetts. And he said, quote, "Incredibly, Mr. Bush," that's Mr. Bush, "is trying to persuade the country that instead of persistent high unemployment, $1 trillion in new federal debt over the next 2 years, continued American deaths in Iraq, unhindered progress towards a North Korean nuclear capacity, and a bogging down of his agenda in Congress, Americans should be seriously worried about the prospect that two men who love each other might be allowed to become legally and financially responsible for each other." I love that quote.
That was and that quote was on the mark, too, because as we were talking about before we got on the air, there are so many bigger fish for Bush to be frying right now.
Yes, but, things
but
like the economy.
This one's easy. This one's easy. And I have to warn you, and I have to warn all the listeners out there, that it's about to get real ugly in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
We can expect a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage to clear Congress and to be submitted to the states for ratification.
Wow.
Now, there's bad
news
here.
We don't have 37 states, do we?
Well, there's bad news here, but there's good news. The bad news is a majority of the states will quickly ratify this amendment. But the good news is I think we will eke out a victory here, although it is going to be close. Now, Joan, is it 37 states or is it 38 states that we need to ratify?
Well, it was 37. I thought we need at least 13 to refuse.
I was thinking it was 38, but now that I do my math, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and check this. Now you've got me a little bit stumped.
stumped David.
but here's the deal. Here's the deal. I think the other side might be able to get to 35, but I don't think they're going to be able to get to either 37 or 38. Remember
wow.
that 13 states have gay civil rights laws.
I don't even think they're going to get to 35. I think we're going to be lucky if they see 30, because there's lots of people who may not like this idea, but they're not necessarily going to legislate it into the Constitution.
We'll see. You know, I living inside the Beltway here, Joan, I probably pay more attention than I should to poll numbers. And right now, there's a huge backlash out mm-hmm. there. You know, the sort of backlash that happened when the Supreme Court handed down Brown v. Board of Education
yeah.
in 54, and also the same backlash that happened when the Supreme Court temporarily struck down anti-death penalty laws in
yeah.
1972. It's bad right now. It may get better, but we're in for a bit of a bruising before that happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, that's a long way off. Hopefully things will change a bit before that all, you know, happens. You know, that's a good thing about putting constitutional amendments on. It's a long process. And our more immediate one, we have elections here in Houston for mayor and council. And in fact, there's actually an election in September for constitutional amendments, which most people don't know a lot about. I don't know very much about. And there's like 25, I think, of these amendments. So the voters have to be educated on all this stuff. And we'll try to do what we can. But we also, you know, you also need to read the newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Somebody good at math called in to say it's 38 states.
Oh,
well, then David was right. I'm not surprised.
I appreciate the clarification, because I couldn't figure out whether I knew it was 3/4, but I couldn't figure out whether you go forward or count backwards. So that's okay.
And, you know, the thing is that if they did try to put something like that into a constitutional amendment of all things, it would end up being like the temperance proposition was, or I mean the temperance
prohibition
yeah. amendment,
right, where they tried to outlaw drinking in the Constitution, and then they just had to turn around and reverse it. I mean, it's something, if they did that, they would really regret doing it very shortly afterwards,
right? But you know, something about civil rights movements is that they are not linear. you know, you do not see progression after progression after progression.
Well, exactly, exactly. And just as, you know, there are so many different fronts that all this, just like, you know, working against the sodomy laws, it wasn't just one way. There was many different ways it was being worked on, especially here in Texas.
Oh, sure. You know, you had your fight going on in Arkansas. You had your fight going on in Missouri and in Kansas and in Georgia. We, you know, it's almost become a cliche, but regardless of what type of civil rights movement you're working on, you can expect to always see one step backwards for every two steps forward.
Yeah.